Ever heard of zombie ordinances? Laws that are like dead and buried, but then they come back to life? That's kind of what we're looking at today with this case, Laval v. Griffin. It's a Supreme Court case from way back in 1938. And it still has some pretty spooky implications for free speech, even now in like the digital age, you know?
Yeah.
You might be thinking, okay, why should I care about some case from almost 100 years ago? Well, if you're a lawyer or a law student listening, this case is, it's a cornerstone of First Amendment law.
It really is.
It's cited all the time, still in cases about protests, online stuff, you name it.
What's wild is Lovell started as this like small town thing about pamphlets of all things.
Pamphlets, really.
Yeah, but it ended up defining what the press even means in a way that goes way beyond just newspapers and the regular media, you know?
So this little town case had ripple effects, like nationally.
Huge ripple effects. Yeah, it shows how these local laws that seem, you know, maybe even boring,
Right.
they can actually have a massive impact on everyone's rights.
Okay, so paint us a picture. We're in Griffin, Georgia, 1938. No internet,
Yeah.
obviously. If you wanted to control information back then, you had to control, like, the physical stuff, right?
Exactly.
And Griffin decided to do that with this ordinance that basically said no pamphlets without our say-so.
That's pretty much it in a nutshell, yep. They had this ordinance saying you needed permission from the city manager to distribute any kind of literature.
Seriously, any literature at all.
Anything, you name it. And that gave city officials, you know, a ton of power. They could just decide what ideas people were allowed to see.
Whoa. So talk about controlling the flow of information, huh?
For sure. And into this situation walks Alma Lavelle.
Okay, so who is Alma Lavelle?
She was a Jehovah's Witness, and part of their faith involved distributing religious pamphlets, spreading the word, so you speak.
So how did she react to this ordinance? Did she try to, you know, play by the rules and get a permit?
Actually, no, she never even applied for one.
Wait, she just ignored it completely. What was the thinking there?
It wasn't just her, actually. For Jehovah's Witnesses at the time, refusing to ask permission for what they saw as a God-given right was like a core principle.
Interesting. So it was a matter of principle for them.
Definitely. And it ended up being super important to their legal strategy later on. Like, you'll see, it actually resonated with the Supreme Court.
Okay, so we've got this restrictive ordinance. We've got our pamphlet-wielding Jehovah's Witness refusing to back down. What happened next?
Well, she got arrested, of course.
Of course.
The Recorder's Court in Griffin convicted her, sentenced her. She appealed first to the Superior Court, then to the Georgia Court of Appeals.
And
They all sided with the city, every single one.
wow, so it was looking pretty bad for her at that point, huh?
It seemed like a lost cause, for sure. But then the case made it to the Supreme Court. And everything changed. They reversed the lower court's rulings in a unanimous decision. They struck down the Griffin Ordinance completely.
Hold on, unanimous. For a First Amendment case, that's almost unheard of. I mean, these are the kinds of cases that usually split the court right down the middle. What was it about this ordinance that was so over the line?
The Supreme Court saw a fundamental conflict, a clash, really, between two really important constitutional principles. On the one hand, you've got the First Amendment guaranteeing freedom of the press, and that's been made applicable to the states through the 14th Amendment, something called incorporation.
So a right initially meant to limit the federal government now applies to the states too. That's a pretty big deal. But what was the other principle at play here?
On the other hand, cities have the power to regulate public spaces. They need to have some control over what happens on their streets, right?
Right, of course. So was the problem with this Griffin ordinance that it was just like badly written? Maybe it was an okay idea in theory, but they just worded it in a way that gave officials too much power.
Actually, the Supreme Court didn't just say it was bad as it applied to Lava. They said it was void on its face, meaning the ordinance was so flawed, so broad in its scope, that there was no way to apply it constitutionally. Period.
Okay, I think I see where you're going with this.
Think of it this way. There have been other cases later on where permit systems for distributing lease slips or pamphlet and stuff like that have actually survived legal challenges.
So permits themselves aren't necessarily a problem.
Right, but those cases involved systems that were much more narrowly tailored. They were about reasonable restrictions on time, place, and manner. The Griffin Ordinance, that was a total ban on anything that wasn't pre-approved by the city manager. Total control. The court saw that as giving officials way too much power to censor based on basically whatever they felt like. It was
Arbitrary.
totally. And I mean, Chief Justice Hughes himself, he said it was censorship in its baldest form.
Damn. Okay, but I'm guessing the city tried to justify this ordinance, right? Like maybe they claimed it was all about preventing litter or keeping the streets orderly, something like that.
You'd think so, wouldn't you? But nope. The ordinance itself didn't mention any of that. Not a word about litter, public safety, time, place, manner, nothing. It was purely about controlling what people could distribute, the content itself.
Wow. So they just tried to ban anything they didn't like.
Exactly. And the Supreme Court saw right through it. They were like, nah, we're not buying it. They recognized this ordinance for what it was, a blatant attempt to control information, to stifle dissent, to.
To squash any ideas they didn't want out there.
Exactly.
This case is a good reminder that even in a town as small as Griffin, Georgia, these local laws can have a huge impact on, like, national issues.
Oh, absolutely. And Lavelle itself, well, it didn't just die there. Yeah, Lavelle became like this bedrock case in First Amendment law. It's cited in pretty much every case about flyers and leafleting since then, you know. It even kind of laid the groundwork for this other big case, Schnada v. New Jersey, that came a few years later.
Ooh, a sequel. We'll have to put that on the list for a future deep dive for sure.
Definitely.
But before we get sidetracked, let's get back to Lavelle. The court shut down this ordinance, but like, what were their actual reasons? What was the legal meat of it?
Okay, so Chief Justice Hughes, his opinion, it's like a master class in First Amendment law. He starts by putting press freedom in its historical context, you know, reminding us that the fight for a free press was all about breaking free from these licensors, people who could just decide who got to publish and who didn't.
Ah, so that's what they were trying to do in Griffin, like going back to that old system.
Pretty much, yeah. Requiring a permit to hand out pamphlets, it's basically like asking permission for a revolution.
Ooh, I like that. Permission for a revolution. Did the court, like, give any examples of how this kind of control had been used, you know, in the past?
Oh yeah, Hughes specifically mentions Thomas Paine.
The common sense guy.
That's the one. His pamphlets were like super important during the American Revolution.
Right.
And Hughes was saying, look, pamphlets have always been this way to dissent, to spread new ideas, to challenge the system. To require a permit for them is like requiring permission to even think differently.
Wow. Okay. So the court was basically saying the government can't just pick and choose which ideas get to be heard, right?
Exactly. But here's the thing. If this ordinance was so clearly unconstitutional, why did the lower courts all agree with the city?
Yeah, that's what I don't get.
Well, I mean, the city did try to defend themselves. They claimed it was about preventing litter or keeping the streets orderly.
Sounds familiar.
Right, but the court wasn't fooled. Hughes, he just dismantled their arguments one by one. He pointed out that the ordinance didn't say anything about those things. No time, place, or manner restrictions, just a blanket ban.
Pure content control.
Exactly. And that brings us back to that distinction we talked about before between a facial challenge and an as-applied challenge. I think a little refresher might be helpful here.
Yeah, definitely for our listeners who, you know, maybe haven't cracked open their con law textbook in a while.
Okay, so a facial challenge says a law is inherently unconstitutional no matter how it's used. An as-applied challenge says, hey, this law might be okay sometimes, but in this specific case, it's being used in a way that violates the Constitution.
Okay, so it's like, is the law itself bad or just how it's being used this time?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And in Lavelle, the court wasn't just saying that the Griffin Ordinance was being applied wrong. They were saying the law itself was a First Amendment violation, unconstitutional on its face.
Right, like the law itself is the problem, not just how they're using it in this one case.
Exactly. And the court really understood the danger of a law like that. Even if the city had good intentions, the ordinance gave them way too much power. They could censor anything they wanted based on their own, like, personal opinions. And remember, this ordinance wasn't just about, like, obscene material or inciting violence. It covered any literature.
So they could have used it to shut down pretty much anything they didn't like, huh?
Oh, absolutely. And the court wasn't having it. They went even further, you know, and emphasized that distribution is just as important as publication when it comes to free speech. Hughes even wrote that liberty of circulating is as essential to that freedom as liberty of publishing. Indeed, without the circulation, the publication would be of little value.
That makes sense. I mean, if you can't share your ideas with others, what's the point of even having the freedom to express them?
Right. And the court wasn't just talking about newspapers or magazines, you know. They were talking about all sorts of publications, pamphlets, leaflets.
And in today's world, that could be like blog posts, social media.
Exactly. The court was making it clear that the First Amendment's idea of the press, it's broader than just the traditional media. It includes all these other forms of expression, too.
Okay, so Level expanded our understanding of what the press even means.
Big time, yeah.
But, you know, we keep talking about the First Amendment and how it applies to the states, but, like, didn't the Bill of Rights originally only apply to the federal government? How'd that change?
Oh, good question. That's this whole thing in constitutional law called incorporation.
Like, incorporate the Bill of Rights into state law?
Kind of, yeah. This case is an example of selective incorporation. So the 14th Amendment, which came after the Civil War, it says that no state can deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law.
Okay.
And over time, the Supreme Court has said that this means a lot of the rights in the Bill of Rights, they also apply to the states.
So the Bill of Rights, which was meant to limit the federal government's power, now also protects us from the states.
Exactly. It shows how our understanding of individual rights has evolved. And Lavelle was a really big part of that. It established that free speech, protected by the First Amendment, applies to state actions as well.
So Lavelle wasn't just about pamphlets in Griffin, Georgia. It was about, like, the big picture of constitutional law and the fight to protect free speech from government overreach at every level.
Exactly. And that fight, well, it definitely didn't end in 1938. It's still going on today, especially with all the challenges we're seeing in the digital age. But the principles from Lavelle, they're just as important now as they were back then.
Which brings us to the legacy of Lavelle. How has this case, you know, shaped the legal landscape in the decades since? And how does it apply to the free speech issues we're facing today? Well, we'll get into that when we come back for the final part of our deep dive into Lavelle v. Griffin. And we're back wrapping up our deep dive into this whole Lavelle v. Griffin thing. We've seen this tiny town ordinance go all the way to the Supreme Court, looked at the legal arguments and all that. Now it's time to see, like, how much of an impact it actually made. You mentioned earlier that Lavelle gets cited a lot. Can you give us some examples? Like, what kind of legal fights did it actually shape?
Well, Lavelle wasn't just about fixing one bad law, you know? It set this precedent that the government can't just shut down speech because they don't like it before it even happens.
So, before anyone even says a word.
Right. That's called prior restraint, and it's been at the heart of so many First Amendment cases ever since.
So, like, if Griffin had gone after Lavelle with a court order before she handed out any pamphlets...
That would be prior restraint, yeah.
And Lavelle basically says that's a huge no-no, right?
Pretty much. The bar is super high for the government to do that. Like, trying to stop someone from speaking or publishing in advance is almost always unconstitutional.
Makes sense. But how does this work in today's world? Like, what about protests? A lot of times you need permits for those, right? Isn't that prior restraint?
Yeah, it's a tricky area. And Lavelle has been really important in figuring out where the lines are. Cities can definitely set rules about when, where, and how you protest, you know, for safety and stuff like that. But they can't use those rules to censor certain viewpoints or target specific groups.
So they couldn't say, okay, you can protest, but only if you don't say anything bad about the mayor.
Right, exactly. That would be like textbook Lavelle violation. The whole point is that any rules about speech have to be neutral. They can't be based on what the message actually is.
Okay, that makes sense. But what about social media? We hear so much about censorship on these platforms, Facebook, Twitter, all that. Does Lavelle have anything to say about that?
It's a really hot topic right now, and the legal stuff is still getting figured out. But Lavelle does give us a way to think about it. Remember, the court was focused on the function of spreading information, not just the specific way it's done. So even though social media isn't the same as a city street,
right,
the logic of Lavelle could apply. The question is, are these platforms acting like public forums where people can share ideas?
So if a platform bans certain opinions or censors users just because of what they're saying?
Some people are arguing that, yeah, that could be the kind of prior restraint that Lavelle is supposed to prevent. It's complicated. There are lots of legal details, but the big free speech ideas from Lavelle, those are definitely relevant.
This is why I find this case so interesting. It started with pamphlets in some small town, but it touches on these huge issues about free speech that are still playing out today.
It really does show how one case can have a ripple effect that lasts for decades. And it reminds us that even the most obscure sounding cases, you never know how important they might become.
For sure. So for our listeners, especially the lawyers and law students out there, what's the main takeaway here? What you could keep in mind as they, you know, deal with free speech law in their work?
I think a big takeaway is that Lavelle v. Griffin set this really powerful precedent. It protects all kinds of expression from government censorship. It reminds us that the government can't just shut down ideas it doesn't like. And even though there are good reasons to have rules about, like, the time, place, and manner of speech, those rules can't be used to silence certain people or viewpoints.
This has been a great deep dive. I hope our listeners are feeling, you know, informed and ready to take on these issues themselves. It's amazing how a case from almost 100 years ago about something as simple as pamphlets can still be so important to today.
It really shows how strong the First Amendment is and how important it is to keep fighting for free speech.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, we've come to the end of our deep dive into Lavelle v. Griffin. But I do have one final question, something to keep you all thinking. What if Griffin had get a little smiter? What if they had only banned commercial flyers? Would Lavelle have won then? Does Lavelle protect all types of literature the same way? Or is there a difference between commercial and non-commercial speech? That's a question for another deep dive, maybe one looking at Schneider v. New Jersey. But until then, keep those legal minds sharp and keep those voices heard.